Welcome to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com.
Good morning and welcome to this, our latest live Burr News Facebook interview. I'm joined today, a very special guest, Premier David Burt.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Good morning. Hey,
good morning to We've interviewed you
in the past. It's the first time I've had the pleasure of addressing you as Premier. You must still be pinching yourself at the size of the victory.
No, not entirely. I think that the victory itself was a measure of a disciplined campaign and a message of change and a mandate that the people of this country would like to see us build a better and fairer Bermuda.
Did you actually envisage that you would have a majority of 12, though?
12 seats? We were confident that we would win 22 seats. And so we were, for the most part, and so there were surprises. The only real surprise for us on election night was Dennis Issa III, but we were confident that Chris was going to take out the former minister who used to inhabit this office. And I mean, we've worked hard during the election campaign. Now is the time to make sure that we can govern.
Do you think it's created a weight of expectation on you, though?
Certainly it's created a weight of expectation, but I think that the 29 members of our caucus, which includes the 24 members of Parliament, no longer the Speaker of the House,
yeah.
But I mean and our Senate team, I think that we are equal to the task of making sure that we execute our platform, and we started laying out how we're going to do that with our throne speech last week.
It's interesting talking about the throne speech. I read it and read it and read it, and I searched it. And you will obviously correct me if I'm wrong, but I couldn't really see any mention of budgets.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got around about, 5.5 months until you set the next budget.
Absolutely.
What are your spending plans until then?
The spending plans is that we're going to continue with the budget that was set by the previous government.
Right. So you'll be looking to balance the budget and indeed try and get a surplus.
We are going to continue the spending plans of the previous government. The budget itself will be outlined in February. But when it comes to this current fiscal year, we're not going to table anything new or different. There are some spending that we've inherited from the former government, which we'll deal with at a later point in time. But from the perspective of this year, we're just going to go with the figures that are budgeted. So what has happened over the years is that the government has not filled positions. And that has been the way in which they've kind of tried to save money. And we've seen the result of them not filling the positions, whether we see the result of the lack of maintenance that has been in our schools, which are causing us problems, whether we see the result of the lack of maintenance with our public buses, which is now causing us extra money.
You've said you're going to stick to the spending plans. Now, explain to me how that equates to spending up to over $600,000 on minibuses or the recent announcement by the health minister that more people are going to be employed, or the 6 maintenance guys you're going to get in for the bus depot.
It's very simple. Those positions were already funded in the One Bermuda Alliance's budget.
Right.
They just did not approve the hiring. So that money for the people at the K. Margaret Carter Center, which the Minister of Health spoke about, those 6 positions at the public at DPT, those positions are already funded in the budget.
So they're
not additional and expended.
Right.
They are already budgeted positions.
Right. I wanted to clarify that because there's been a lot of confusion and conversation about that.
It's very important, and there is a lot. So I appreciate the ability to clarify that. But those positions are already funded.
Okay. Now, if there's a need, you're going to stick within the spending plans for this financial year. Mm-hmm. If there's a need that arises for additional spending, how will you deal with that?
Well, we're going to have to make sure that we have to be very careful, and so we have to find places to take money from.
Right.
But one thing I will make it very clear is that this government will not absorb, and we will be very clear when it comes to our budgeting, that if there are unbudgeted expenses, the requirement of our Constitution is for unbudgeted expenses to go to Parliament as soon as they're known.
For supplementary?
Yes, absolutely. And in the last weeks, we found some unbudgeted expenses. So in the future, we'll be tabling something to make sure the people of this country are clear about
this. Okay. So if it's a sense of robbing Peter to pay Paul, it's not a great analogy, but it's good enough. If you're going to have to fund something, have you identified other areas that you can cut?
That's what the job of the Minister of Finance is, and that's what we do.
So have you identified those areas?
We are going to stick within the spending plans, and we're going to not breach the cash limits.
But if you're having to spend more, you're going to have to take it from somewhere else. And you said you're going to table a supplementary estimate.
I mean, well, there's certain places where we can spend less. I mean, we can look at the amount of money which has been spent at Mellon Jones and Martin, a law firm that got lots of work from the former government. I mean, there's lots of places where you can say insofar as reprioritizing the spending of money. But I'm not going to go line through line, because I'm sure if you take up your 25 minutes of time, you won't have much.
I wouldn't expect you to go for line for line, but it would be interesting to see if there's a couple of general areas that you can pinpoint.
What I'll say is that, and when we get to the budget time, those things will be specific.
But the thing is, as I mentioned, you've got 5.5 months to budget time. Mm-hmm. You're sticking to the OBA's budget plans. You've already identified there's going to be a supplementary estimate. You've got to find that money from somewhere else.
For a supplementary estimate, no.
2019, you aim to balance the budget. Is that still very much the case?
Absolutely.
The Chamber of Commerce, after the last budget, after the last previous government's budget, said government's objective, and that was obviously talking about the OBA, mm-hmm. of balancing the budget by the end of 2018-19 will be a challenging one. Mm-hmm. How are you going to do it? Can I just say that my reading of this is that you've got to have enough government surplus to pay off the debt.
That's not correct. Balancing the budget is that you take in as much money as you spend. And so from that aspect, that's where a balanced budget comes in. And then when you get a surplus, you can use that money to reduce outstanding debt.
So the spending doesn't include the managing of the debt?
Pardon me?
Does the spending include the debt repayment?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, I mean, a balanced budget, there are specific requirements that we have in our finances insofar as the sinking fund, which has to be met every year, and otherwise. So all those things will come into play. But what I will say is that it is going to be a challenge, unquestionably. And what we've committed to inside of our platform, what we've committed to inside of our throne speech, is that we're going to do whatever we can to bring economic growth to Bermuda. Our budget problems become a lot simpler when we create jobs in Bermuda. Our budget problems become a lot simpler when we're able to unleash economic growth. And those are the things which we're focused on. So whether that's providing additional support for entrepreneurs to create economic growth, whether that's to ensure that we can increase training in Bermuda so that more persons can get back to work, or whether that's ensuring that whether it be tourism projects get online, or making sure that we do the work that's required to promote Bermuda overseas to bring additional companies here. Growth is the thing that's required.
Whatever you do, though, whatever you put into place now, there's going to be a time lag mm-hmm. before anything happens. Mm-hmm. Now, balancing the budget by March 31st, 2019 is only mm-hmm. 18 months away. Mm-hmm. Are you confident that whatever you put in now mm-hmm. will see the benefits far enough for you to balance the budget?
Again, we are going to maintain to our platform commitment of balancing the budget, and that's what we'll do.
Didn't answer my question. The stuff you're going to put in place now, mm-hmm. Are you confident that will generate enough revenue that will happen quickly enough for you to be able to balance the budget in 2019? You're talking about job growth. You're putting a lot of emphasis on job growth, mm-hmm. but it can't happen overnight.
Oh, no, job growth can't happen overnight. However, the fact is that when the measures of which we will put forward in the budget, we're going to maintain to our plan that we will balance the budget.
Independence. Got to talk about it.
Sure.
Jason Hayward.
The Royal Gazette's talking about it, so why not everyone else?
Jason Hayward did raise the question of independence. Now, Minister Simmons made the point that he remembers now that he thinks now that when you've got no personal opinion, you're talking on behalf of the government. Does the same apply for Jason Hayward as a senator?
Here's what I would say. I would say that if someone speaks at a Labor Day speech, it should be taken in the context of which it's spoken. Independence is in the Progressive Labor Party's constitution. It's not an issue that we hide from. However, the fact is that this government right now is not committed to pursuing independence at this time. This government is committed to growing the economy and making sure we fix the immediate challenges that are inside of the country right now, when we talk about education, when we talk about social issues, or when we talk about creating economic growth. So whatever issues the Royal Gazette seems to want to focus on, there are issues.
So
those aren't
going to
be the issues that the government will focus on.
Let's just bottom this down now. This is not on your agenda now.
That's not
a cabinet or government's agenda.
It clearly is not. And I I think that is clear for anyone to see, except for the mischief makers that happen to live on Parlerville Street.
The other issue out there is very much in the public domain is this question of same-sex marriage. Mm-hmm. And there's been an awful lot of speculation about the governor's role in this. Have you spoken to the governor about this?
I do not disclose the conversations that I have with the governor. That's not poor form, and premiers do not disclose those type of information. What I will say is that as we move forward, we have stated our position inside of our platform, and we'll move forward on those matters.
Why is supporting this bill, or why is the sentiment of not supporting same-sex marriage so important to the PLP?
I don't think it's so important to the PLP.
Important enough to put in your manifesto?
I think it was clear that we would take a position, unlike the former government who did not take a position.
Well, they did. And
they did not take a position. Thank you. And so from they did not take a position, and from the perspective of where we stand, we thought it was important to lay out the position of the Progressive Labour Party.
In terms of this bill, I mean, it's getting quite complicated.
What bill?
The same as Wayne Ferbert's Human Rights Amendment bill.
Okay.
It seems to be getting quite complicated. In a previous interview we did for Burn News, we spoke to Mark Pettingill and Roderick Rice Sterling, and they suggested that Mr. Ferbert's bill could actually have the effect of stopping those who've married getting divorced, and therefore there'd need to be a whole new piece of legislation. Is that something you guys have thought about?
What I would say is that we're right now talking about a hypothetical bill who hasn't been tabled yet, so I think it's probably best that we discuss those things when they happen.
Moving on quickly, it's nice to get these sort of clarified as far as
no
we can.
I'm doing my best, as I know our time is short.
Indeed. One of your manifesto pledges, and indeed it was in the threat speech, is to review the privatisation contract between Aecon and the government over the building of the airport. Can you give us an idea of what specifically you're looking at in that review?
What we're looking at is to find out whether or not Bermuda can get a better deal. What would be the what would be the cost to the country if a different contract vehicle was pursued? And we're reviewing it overall. We don't have all of the details of the airport contract. We also don't understand some of the good governance things which may be enshrined. I got information today that a new company is being started, which is related to principles of Aecon, in Bermuda, to possibly get the drywall contract there. I mean, there are lots of concerns.
Can you just expand on that a bit?
I'm going to expand it as much as I did just now, that we got information this morning that a new company has been started to take advantage of drywall opportunities, which may be the airport, which have similar principles to the principles of Aecon. I mean, these are the type of things of which we have to look at and which we're going to examine. Let's not forget, this is our tax money that is going to this company. So the Bermuda Airport Authority, which used to collect this money on our behalf and we could use it for the benefit of the people of Bermuda, is now going to Aecon and through the vehicle of CCC. We're going to examine it with a fine-tooth comb. That is our responsibility as government.
Who will do the review?
That review is being handled by the Attorney General Chamber.
It's ongoing now, is it?
It is.
Okay. Have you got a rough timetable for that at all?
We will complete it before 100 days.
I was going to ask you about that, actually, yeah. What about the signal that this could give to other companies? Here we come along, Aecon's come along, it's signed a deal in good faith, presumably, and other people are looking at the kind of investment that's happening in Bermuda, and suddenly a new government comes in and says, we're going to review this, we're not happy with it. Are you concerned that sends out any signals?
We're going to review every single contract that we see, and this is not the only contract that's under review. Other contracts will be under review.
Which one?
I'm not going to disclose those, but that's just the nature of government. When a government comes in, they review all the items that are on their plate. What I will tell you is very simple, is that there has been no change of the Progressive Labour Party's position that the airport contract of which we are in is not the best deal for the country. And we are talking about something that, again, is robbing us of precious money that we can use in many places in our society. We don't believe it's the best deal. We understand that there's contractual obligations. You've never heard us say that we're going to cancel the contract, like the former government canceled a contract. But it's our right to review it, and we will.
Aecon presumably are cooperating with the review, are they?
I would assume so.
And are you concerned? Has there been any? Aecon was reported recently as a subject to a takeover. Is there any risk? This being presumably a fairly flagship project for them, a profitable project.
You can rest assured it is an incredibly profitable project.
Most PPPs are. That's why they're going for them, including the hospital. Mm-hmm. But could this affect their sale? Have they talked to you about that at all?
They haven't spoken to me about it, but those items are live with the Deputy Premier, who's the Minister for Transport. What I would say from the perspective of the Ministry of Finance is that, and as Premier of the country, that's what you get when you privatize things. You lose control. So whoever they sell themselves to, if they sell themselves to, they'll be the new owners of our airport. That's what happens in privatization.
A couple of things that did stand out from the throne speech, more than a couple of things, obviously there was a lot to digest there, is this issue of a living wage. Mm-hmm. Now, I've did some research, and I found several definitions of the living wage. Just bear with me, and I'll read three of them very, very briefly. Generally means that a person working 40 hours a week with no additional income should be able to afford the basics of quality of life. Another one, living wage, defined as the wage equivalent to the poverty line for a family of four. Or one was used by the now defunct Greater London Authority. It's calculated as 60% of the median wage with an additional 15%. For unforeseen events, what's your definition of a living wage?
Well, I'm not going to say what my definition of the living wage is. What I am going to tell you is that the Parliamentary Committee for the Living Wage, which did the work before, is going to be reformed, and they are going to report what they believe a living wage for Bermuda will be. It's going to be a bipartisan committee. We're going to discuss it in Parliament, and the government will take it on.
It wasn't mentioned in the throne speech, was it, that it was a bipartisan committee? So it is going to
be. It's a committee of Parliament, so all committees of Parliament are bipartisan.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay. Now, why not a minimum wage? What's the difference between a minimum wage and a living wage as far as you're concerned?
A minimum wage is, I think, the basic statutory threshold of which you can pay someone. It doesn't necessarily take into account poverty lines and other items. And I think, therefore, and a living wage, I think, in some of the things of which you just described, speaks into account the items in the country to make sure that people can remain outside of poverty. But as I said, I'm confident that the Parliamentary Committee will continue its work. I'm confident that the bipartisan committee will come up with something that is workable for Bermuda, and we will debate it and look to implement it this year.
As soon as that?
Yes.
When the Parliamentary Committee looks at this, will it be reaching out to other stakeholders in the community?
That's what they did before the election, and I'm sure they'll do it after.
Because there will be a concern, I'm sure, out there that this will increase costs for employers.
I'm sure there will be.
But do you think it will increase costs for employers?
What I think is that we must look overall at the system, and I think that's what the examination, and I think that's what the committee's work will do. So I think that we should wait for the committee's work to finish, and then when the committee's work is finished, then we'll be in a better position to judge.
But in your opinion, as Premier and Finance Minister, mm-hmm. Is there a realistic chance that people will lose jobs as a result of this?
I'm not going to go so far as to say there's a realistic chance that people lose jobs.
Is there a possibility?
I don't think so. I mean,
if your costs go up?
Well, here's the thing. You're assuming that costs will go up.
I'm assuming costs will go up. A lot of people are assuming costs will go up.
That's perfectly fine, but as far as I'm concerned, if you're paying someone an amount that will keep them under the poverty line if they work 40 hours a week, then that's a problem. I think that's a problem.
Oh, I beg your pardon?
That's a problem. And so what we have to do is that we examine it. Work should have dignity. Work should not keep people below the poverty line. And so we're going to look at that aspect. And I'm not going to buy into the old school economic trickle-down theories, which have seemingly failed many countries in this world and will fail us. We are going to look about building from the bottom.
December the 2nd, you're setting up a parliamentary committee. Now, I didn't realize this. So you're saying the parliamentary committees are all bipartisan,
they
so
are.
We'll have members of the OBA?
Absolutely.
Okay. What do you hope to get from that? Because we've had several reports.
On December 2nd?
Yeah.
What happened? The truth of what
happened. But we've had several. You're not happy with the reports that have come out so far?
The reports that have come out have focused on the police operational aspects. There's particular issues when we talk about the police complaints authority, about the fact that police complaints are investigated by the police and not by independent authorities. And then there are specific issues about we still do not understand how violent force, captive spray, was made to be used against protesters. The reports that came from the parliamentary, that came from overseas, only focus on the police action at the main gate. There was nothing and no mention about the police action at the side gate. There are unanswered questions, and we're going to get to the bottom of that because we believe that it was a dark day in our country's history.
What will you do with the report? I mean, with the recommendations?
The report will be there for public consumption.
It will.
Part of government and part of moving on is putting information inside of the public domain so people can make their own decisions and choices for them. Well, and I think that's the most important thing.
Do you think these committees will be open to the public?
Absolutely. I would expect that the new speaker would most likely make these committees open.
And the media will be invited to govern them because they're the conduit.
It's a parliamentary committee. I think that if you've seen the measures at which we've started, we are going to be as transparent as possible. There are reports.
Every government starts off by saying they're going to be transparent. That's proof's in the pudding.
That's perfectly fine, and I think that the proof has already been in the pudding. We've said that we're going to share things with the public that other persons did not share, the former government did not share. A perfect example is the CARTAG report, which spoke about tax reform Bermuda. We are going to put into place our 100-day pledges, the code of conduct for members, the code of practice for project managed procurement. These are things that we are going to do. So other governments can talk about them, but I think in our 8 weeks, we've kind of demonstrated that, and we'll continue to demonstrate it.
Financial assistance was another mentioned in the throne speech. I was quite intrigued by this. There was one sentence. This review will require... We're talking about, so I undertake a review of the financial assistance program, so our viewers can understand the context. Then it said, this review will require able-bodied unemployed persons who are receiving assistance to upgrade their education and skills to facilitate their return to workforce. Are you tying financial assistance to training like this?
And that is the plan.
How will that work in practice? Because maybe they're just not able to. Maybe they can't get the training. Maybe there's nothing relevant for them. Are you going to actually just take away financial assistance?
I think that you'd be selling Bermudians short and their ability to do so. It is the belief of this government that everyone has a role to play inside the economy, and we'll make sure that people have a role to play inside the economy.
But will you just take away financial assistance?
Able-bodied unemployed persons will be required to upgrade their skills.
And if they don't do that... And they will have financial assistance removed?
Well, we will see specifically what it is, but I think if you look again what I've said, the requirement will be for able-bodied, unemployed persons to upgrade their skills, whether or not that's getting a GED, whether or not that's getting additional certification. That will be the requirement of them to upgrade their skills in order to continue to receive
So they will have financial assistance removed?
It would seem, what I would say is that I'm not going to prejudge what the structure of the review will be, but the intent is for those persons that are on financial assistance to upgrade their skills to facilitate their return to work.
So government then is obviously going to be trying to guide them in the right direction and give them the opportunities to do that.
Absolutely. You've heard in our platform, and you've heard that we've already seen that we're going to give increased training opportunities. But there's also plenty of spaces at the Bermuda College which are underutilized right now. And we see underutilization in many courses. So we believe that having financial assistance is not supposed to be there to have dependency. And if you are receiving financial assistance, we believe that you should be upgrading your skills to make you more marketable in the job market. I do not see any downside whatsoever of increasing the skills of Bermuda's labor force.
We are running short of time, unfortunately, and this is probably going to be the last question. The sugar tax has made quite a lot of news recently, and you know it's a really interesting one. John Barrett and son was in the news recently, and he's hoping that there'll be a scrutiny of all food categories. He's hoping it's not just going to be soft drinks. Have you got an idea of what kind of products you're looking at for sugar tax?
No, that's why we're going to engage in a consultation process. We're at the beginning, nowhere near close to the end. I was amused when reading in certain places talking about a proposed sugar tax. What we are going to do is we're going to consult, and a consultation is important, and consultation is the basis of forming good policy. That's what this government will do.
There are some schools of thought that see this as a regressive tax.
There are some schools of thought see aggressive tax, absolutely.
Do you?
But what we're going to do is that we're going to focus on what will have the best outcome for the long-term health needs of the public. We have issues with chronic diseases. We have issues with preventable chronic diseases, and we have to address those particular issues.
Do you see it as a regressive tax?
I think I saw a figure that said the cost of a kidney transplant is $300,000.
That's a lot of money.
I mean, and so when we look at certain things from that perspective, we have to look at what works. And I happen to think that we can structure things in Bermuda to make it work for us.
But do you see it as a regressive tax?
Well, we don't know what the tax will look like. So you can't call it regressive until it's there.
I think the principle of a sugar tax, you can call it regressive if you want to, if you're in that school of thought, whether it's there or not.
It seems that that's your school of thought, Jeremy.
I'm putting it out there. I've done the research last night.
I would prefer it's a way to see what comes from the consultation before we start branding it as regressive or not.
You mentioned, I believe, that this money would be ring-fenced. Is that correct, for health measures?
I don't know if that was in the speech, but I would expect that that would be something that probably be a good thing. But I don't remember that being the speech.
I, to be honest, I actually don't remember.
Given that I wrote the speech, I don't remember typing ring fence.
I'll rephrase the question. Will it be ring fence to deal with health issues?
That's a consideration that I'm sure we'll undergo through
for
the
public education.
Process, yeah.
Okay. We are short for time. It's unfortunate. Hopefully next time we'll get more time, Premier. But it's been a delight talking to you. Thank you very much indeed for sparing your time.
No problem. Thank you. And I hope that you tune into the House tomorrow.
Thank you for tuning in to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com, your 24/7 Bermuda news source.